All right, good morning, everyone. Welcome. Please, again, remember to silence your cell phones. We're going to go ahead and get started. My name is Marlo Tapley. I am a Senior Director of Sales Operations and Strategic Programs with Oracle. I am very honored to be your MC this morning at our very first session. I'm also really excited to be here and interacting with all of you as we learn how to better support the advancement and empowerment of women leaders across this state. I am a member of OWL, which stands for Oracle Women's Leadership. Got some friends here. So OWL started about 11 years ago, and we've got about, 95 different OWL communities across 46 countries, and our mission is to help develop, engage, empower, and the current and future leaders at Oracle. I want to give a quick shout out to those folks that just shouted for me, so yay, but there's 70 of us here today, so I'm glad that many of my fellow Oracleites are here. Oracle's also proud to be a partner of the Massachusetts Conference for Women. The conference offers tools and inspiration to support you as you make your mark in your companies and in your careers and in your communities. I want to thank you again for taking time out of your busy lives and schedules to participate in this conference, and in particular this session, which is here to focus on resilience and being able to break barriers and thrive. We have an amazing hour in store for you, and I have the pleasure of getting to introduce you to Ann Grady. Ann is a best-selling author of two books, 52 Strategies for Life, Love, and Work, and Strong Enough, Choosing Courage, Resilience, and Triumph. Choosing Courage, Resilience, and Triumph. Ann earned her MA in Organizational Communication and has become known as an expert in leadership, emotional intelligence, and resilience. Please help me welcome Ann Grady.
Good morning. Good morning. Let's try that again. Good morning. Good morning. All right, wonderful. So I'm going to start off and ask you a question. What do you do when the person that you love more than anything in the world tries to kill you? And what do you do when that person is your 3-year-old son? I wish I were joking. My son Evan is severely mentally ill. He first tried to kill me with a pair of scissors when he was 3. He was on his first antipsychotic by the age of 4. He's been hospitalized, and I'll share a little bit more of my story in my session on resilience this afternoon at 3 o'clock, but it forced me to do a deep dive into resilience. What keeps some people stuck? How do some people go through a difficult time and crumble while others rise up and get stronger? And so I really started pouring into the research, and I found that, I used to think that resilience was in your genetics, kind of like skinny thighs. You either have it or you don't. But what I have come to appreciate is that is a set of habits and skills and behaviors that can be proactively cultivated and harnessed and developed. Because whether we like it or not, let's face it, life is going to give us plenty of chances to practice. The average person experiences 5 to 6 traumas in a lifetime, many of us more than that. And we're able to look back with perspective and call it growth, but at the time, it can often seem insurmountable. And I've learned that there are 3 ways that we can truly build unstoppable resilience: your mindset, your skill set, and your ability to reset. Now, your mindset is a collection of habits and belief systems. And what we know is that our beliefs drive our behavior, and beliefs can be changed. Through understanding of the growth mindset, understanding that the way we view failure sets us up for the way we recover from it, is absolutely mission critical to women. We are often victims of a fixed mindset. When we fail, we often take it as a core blow to our self-esteem, who we are as a person. Whereas typically when men fail, they attribute it to their skills and having the ability to learn and get better. The way we view failure is more important than the failure itself. Our mindset determines how we approach everything, and what I have found is that most of us go through life on autopilot. Over 45% of everything we do every single day is a habit. If you don't believe me, when you go home, move your trash can. Our brain depends on these cognitive shortcuts to help us not have to work as hard, but the problem is our brain doesn't know which of these habits are serving us and which of these habits are sabotaging us. And it's really easy for each day to become the same day, and we just kind of end up where we're headed if we're not deliberate about where we want to be, and then reverse engineer our way back from there. Our skills are our tools, and there are hundreds of different skills that you can build proactively to build your resilience muscle. And that's what it is. It is a muscle. And unfortunately, you have to break a muscle down in order to build it back up. And just like any other skill set, there are going to be some of these that work for you and some of these that don't, whether it's gratitude, mindfulness, self-care. There are so many different ways that you can cultivate resilience, and I can't wait to hear from our panelists because they've done an incredible job doing it. And lastly is your ability to reset. You know, I find most of us are great at prioritizing our schedules. Where we slack is scheduling our priorities. Now, if we were to track your time for a week, would it be representative of what you say is most important to you? We've gotten really focused on career and growth, but guess what? Our resume and our eulogy should not be the same thing. Nobody is going to stand over your grave going, "She works 80 hours a week. Yeah." That's not what it's about. As I was starting to study resilience, I stumbled on a talk by a rabbi who was explaining how lobsters grow. And I didn't realize this. I mean, how many of you like lobster? Yeah, for me, it's just a butter delivery mechanism. It's like butter transference. I don't even care about the lobster itself. It just feels weird just drinking butter. When a lobster grows, what's fascinating to me is that its shell becomes constricting and tight. It can't grow with the lobster. So in order to grow, the lobster actually has to shed its shell. And when it does this, it's very vulnerable. It waits under some rocks and some sand, and it takes 2 days, which in our world is nothing. But to a crustacean who has no crust, I don't even know how you would say that, to a crustacean who has no crust, it's a very vulnerable place to be. And it does this its entire life, sometimes 20 or 30 times. So a couple of life lessons I have learned from lobsters. One, if you like them, go for the big ones, because those little boogers are brave. They have been trading out shells their entire life, getting bigger, better, stronger, and braver. But two, and most importantly, discomfort is a catalyst for growth. We achieve strength through struggle. When we make it through a difficult time, we're able to look back and see what we've learned for it, but sometimes in the middle of that difficult time, it can be overwhelming. After my son's second hospitalization, I was diagnosed with a tumor in my salivary gland that led to a whole series of events that if you want to hear about, you can come to my session later. But it taught me that our life is not what happens to us. It is how we interpret that message. It is what we learn from that. It is what we do with that going forward. If you're looking back at your life, the chances that you have grown when things are hunky-dory and perfect are slim to none. If you look at your life and think about the times you have catapulted forward and really grown, it's because things weren't daisies and roses. And that is what our three panelists today are going to talk about. How, in the midst of chaos and challenge, were they able to not only rise up, but thrive in spite of adversity and tragedy and trauma? And I'm so pleased to be able to introduce them today. We have three incredible women. I've just had a chance to meet them, and you're just absolutely going to love them. So first, we have Bea Arthur. Now, Bea is a psychotherapist, a startup founder, an author who works with high-performing individuals in high-pressure environments. Not her first company, not her second company, but her third company is called The Difference. And it provides on-demand access to therapy using Amazon's Alexa. And I can't tell you how many times I've wanted to say, Alexa, what do I do? Tell me what to do. And I can't wait to use that platform. She was named Entrepreneur to Bet On by Newsweek. She's an editorial contributor for Forbes Women, and she hosts a therapy podcast called Be the Change. I am thrilled to welcome to the stage Bea Arthur. Next, we have Mary Mack. She is not all dressed in black. She leads consumer banking for all of Wells Fargo. It's a little bank. I don't know if you've heard of it. She sits on multiple boards, including the United Way and Habitat for Humanity, and was named one of the most powerful women in business for the last several years. Please help me welcome to the stage Mary Mack. Now, how many of you like cheesecake? Yeah, I'd bathe in it if it was allowed. So you remember in 2018 when we had the longest government shutdown in history. And our next speaker, Jackie Wright, found herself without a job, without a paycheck, going into the holiday season and didn't know what to do. And what started as a cheesecake donation to her church's New Year's Eve party became a phenomenal business. It is incredible. It basically turned into a family business, and she quickly gained media attention. I was telling her this morning, my dream has to be on Ellen, and she was on Ellen, and Cheerios and Ellen gave them $20,000. That is so incredible. It's amazing. And now their cheesecakes are in over 100 Walmarts and soon to fill many, many more. Please welcome Jackie Wright. All right, ladies, first of all, thank you so much for being here. I'm thrilled to share a stage with you. I have so many questions, but I thought today we could break them down into those three areas: our mindset, our belief systems, our skill set, the tools that we can cultivate and build, and finally our reset, our ability to really focus on our priorities, what matters most. We all hear the term work-life balance. Would love to get some of your thoughts and perspectives on that. And you know, really, what would you want people to know about your journey? So if it's okay with you, Bea, we'll start here. So in the context of your story, I'd love a brief overview of your story. And what I'd love to know is, how has your mindset shaped your ability to grow emotional endurance? Because I think that's something we all need. And I'd love to know how you've done that.
Yeah, well, first of all, y'all, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. And damn, you are funny as hell. On our prep call, I kept telling her, I was like, why are we even here? You should just do the whole hour. So I'm very glad to be here, and I hope it's valuable.
I'm doing it later today.
All right. I'm glad to share this time with y'all. But yeah, so I've been a licensed mental health counselor for over 10 years, and I've been in the psychology technology space for about like 8 years. So I was kind of like oddly equipped, because you do have to have mindset and like perspective from the very beginning, whereas your mindset as an entrepreneur is completely different. As a therapist, I've worked with murderers, I've worked with addicts in recovery, and what you learn with people, all these people, everybody has stuff and everyone has their reasons. No one is ever trying to be the bad guy. So for me, coming up, as far as my journey, I was the first African-American female founder in Y Combinator. I started my first company coming out of Columbia. And I think what happens when you're the only person like you, being the only woman, even recently I just did the Techstars Accelerator, I was the only black person and the only black woman. And you really, really, really have to believe in yourself. How many entrepreneurs do we have in the audience? Okay, so not that many, but y'all are going to struggle. So y'all are going to have a struggle, like celebration, because it's really hard. But the good thing is, you don't learn that much about people in good times. You only learn about people going through bad times. I've been evicted twice in this 9-year journey. And one thing that I always say, like, I wish I could have enjoyed it more. Because if you look at it, I got to live in a Manhattan apartment by myself for free for 10 months. The day they finally changed the locks on me, I was like, this is a good run. Like, you know, that's how I had to reframe it. I've had a very blessed journey. And like, and on the other side of it, I got to work with Amazon. So yes, I was paying payroll instead of rent. Yes, I was paying lawyers because working with Amazon Legal is taking years off of my life. But instead of that, it all went, like, you know, it was a really frustrating thing at the time. Every single day, I had to go up the stairs thinking, this is going to be the day I get locked out. This is the day I'm going to be homeless. Oh my God, I'm giving a TED Talk and I'm fucking homeless. But when I look back, like, I got to subsidize this journey. And like, it's really about just how you think about your mindset. So
I love that. I got to live in a Manhattan apartment for 10 months for free.
Free.
Oh, that's
lucky like that.
That's awesome. All right. So Mary, your leadership journey is an amazing story. And I know it's easy to think that it's, you know, point A to point B. It's a straight line. It's just clear cut. And we know that's not the truth, right? Your position as head of Wells Fargo Consumer Banking has brought you ups and downs and rights and lefts. And what I would love to know is share your journey. How have you gone through your career? What has your mindset meant for you?
So thank you. I'm delighted to be here. And yes, ups and downs and rights and lefts were all yesterday. I started at the bank 35 years ago. I went to a little liberal arts college in North Carolina called Davidson. You all might know it because it's the home of, thank you. It's the home of Steph Curry,
oh,
who is the husband of Aisha Curry. So you would know it that way. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I came out of a liberal arts education when people weren't hiring liberal arts majors. So I went around the country with our careers office speaking to CEOs about the value of hiring somebody who could think and problem solve and communicate. And I got a job with a little bank in North Carolina, which I was not interested in at all, but I thought, I'll find a customer. I was in the wholesale bank. I'll find a customer and go do some, make stuff, you know, do something cool. And 35 years later, I am still at Wells Fargo, which was another company when I started. I have been probably less intentional than you about winding up in places where I could make a difference. So 3 years ago, about 3 weeks before we made our sales practice announcement at Wells Fargo, I got a call from the then COO who said, look, we want you to come run our community bank. I asked him two questions. I was living in St. Louis, having the time of my life. I said, do you care where I live? Because my husband was still trying to practice law back in South Carolina while we were living in St. Louis. And he said, no. So we moved right back into our house. And I said, we're going on my husband's bucket list trip tomorrow to Alaska. Do I need to change my plans? He said, no, get an Iridium phone, which for any of y'all, had no idea what that was. It's a big bag phone, like your first one. I carried it around Alaska. My girls were horrified that I was carrying around this bag phone. And we made all of our announcements. I came back, walked in, and they said, we got this little thing we've been working on that we're going to announce in 3 weeks around sales practices. You need to fix it. So I called my mom. I was in San Francisco, stuck for 2 weeks. I went out there for a week or for 2 days for the announcement. I stayed in the Omni, washed my socks in the sink for 2 weeks, and called my mom on a Friday night. She heard the siren. She said, this doesn't sound like I live in a little town in South Carolina. This doesn't sound like where you live. Where are you? I said, well, Mom, you know, Wells Fargo's had a little problem, and I'm out here to get it fixed. And just like a mom can do, she said, Mary, it's not something you did, is it? I said, no. I didn't, but thank you for the vote of confidence. It's been, you know, a journey since then. I now run our lending business, our branch system, all of our consumer businesses. We serve 70 million customers. If you're one of those, thank you. And thank you for sticking with us. We've made great changes, and we're doing really well. And that story is going to be written.
So you're not busy.
I have a wonderful husband who has evolved with me. I've been displaced twice in my career. I ended up without a job. I had to go find one. I have a wonderful husband who's flexed. We have three daughters. Yeah, there's a lot.
When you said that about the bag phone, it reminded me, this dates me, but my senior year of high school, in case of emergencies, my parents got me that bag phone, but it had the little tiny cord that plugged into the lighter, and so if you wanted to make a call, you had to get real down low by the ashtray.
Oh, my God.
And I was told it's only for emergencies. It's $20 a minute.
That's right.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing that. Jackie, the story of how the furlough cheesecake came to fruition is absolutely incredible. Taking lemons and turning it into lemonade. Oh my gosh, I have so many questions, but one would be, How did it come to be? How did you overcome that fear? It's not like you ran multiple businesses before this. What did you do to really shift your mindset to make this all possible?
Well, I wish I could take credit 100% as if it was some brilliant thing, but I literally just ate. I mean, that is literally what I did. I want my sister, Nikki Howard, please stand up. She is the person who birthed the cheesecake. Turn around and wave.
Show the audience.
This beautiful girl is my younger sister. She's 22. We're 22 months apart, and literally, both of us were furloughed from two different government agencies. We were both trying to figure it out. We had already purchased our Christmas gifts, so it's not like we can say never mind because we were still out of work. But, you know, we were literally just trying to figure it out. And in the meantime, she decided to donate 4 sweet potato cheesecakes to New Year's Eve. I know, sweet potato cheesecake. It is so insane. And I've always been the eater, the foodie in the family. So this time it paid off, right, sister? Yeah, I'm serious. People will call me and say, listen, I have leftovers. Come and get them. It's bad. But that cheesecake, she sent one home with me on New Year's Eve. And it was my mom, our mother, and I. We sat down and ate it. And it was so good, literally, on New Year's Day, I'm sitting in my pajamas watching a movie, forgot about the furlough, forgot about everything. And I'm not even, honestly, a huge cheesecake fan before now. I like icing and cake and cookies. But that cheesecake changed my life that moment. And literally, she called in the middle of us just talking about, oh, God, it's so good. Is that a homemade crust? What is that? And we're just talking. And our mommy said, oh, it's just so good, you can sell it. And that's when I sat up in my pajamas and I'm like, sissy, why don't we sell it? And she said, girl, I'm on furlough. I said, well, let's call it the furlough cheesecake. And literally, that is how it was born.
Wow. That's amazing. When you were talking about that, I felt like Oprah, like, you get a cheesecake and you get a cheesecake and you get a cheesecake.
I wish I did. I did not.
She did not bring a cheesecake for all of you, so you're going to have to go to Walmart and buy those bad boys. I have never tried a sweet potato cheesecake.
You're not ready.
I'm not ready.
You're not ready.
Oh, I am ready. You have no idea how ready I am. So your mindset and your belief system really shifts your perspective. It shapes your behavior, and a lot of people wait to be happy. Right? If blank happens, then I'll be happy. And what we know is happy isn't a trait, it's a skill. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a learned skill. It's something that if we're not happy where we are, we won't be happy where we're going. And so when we talk about building skills, it's not just creating happy, but it's also what do you do to get that mindset where you want it to be? So, you know, leadership can be incredibly lonely. I'm an entrepreneur. It sounds super glamorous, but there's lots of times when you're sitting in your underwear at midnight trying to solve a problem, mm-hmm. right? Because nobody else is there to help you solve it. And it can be a very lonely place. And so if you had to give us advice on what skills that we could build to help us create community, whether you work for a large organization, a small organization, your own organization, what are some skills that have helped you combat that through your journey?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about leadership, you know, unfortunately in American culture, what's become known as good leadership, I like to call loudership. It's usually just the person who's the loudest and beats over everybody and like, this is how we're going to do it. And everybody just kind of like submits into allowing this thing to happen. When everybody, at least a few people, the right people in the room, know that it should be going a different way. So again, it is about trusting your voice. It is about really knowing who you are. And as far as the isolation piece, yeah, like when you're an entrepreneur, it's tough. Like your investors do not want to hear the bad news. You cannot tell your employees because you have to keep morale high. And even when you tell your friends, like outside of entrepreneurship, I'm like, girl, I just got evicted. And they're like, but you're on TV. Like, you're on stage with Mary Mack. And I'm like, did you hear the first part? You know, and so it can be a very isolating experience. And so that's why it's really important to know the narrative of who you are, no matter what happens. Like, I mean, even if you're not an entrepreneur, life is literally just walking a tightrope at the circus. A circus, y'all. And people are throwing popcorn. There's monkeys pooping. You know, there's a fire down there. And your job is just to get to the other thing. So I always say you have to know your North Star. And no matter what, like, otherwise you're going to miss the forest for the trees. There's so many things that we do that we think make us feel better. Even, like, exercise and the things that we're... we're taught to feel better. Like, I love to work out, I guess, but I really hate going to ClassPass because, like, you have to, like, get on the subway and all this stuff. And finally, I was like, this is making me miserable, you know? So really know who you are and why you're doing something. It all comes down to identity, community, and purpose. And as long as you're aligned with that, you can't go wrong. So just, like, start to write your story early. And just like the lobsters, it's going to change. You know, just like as a company grows, from 0 to 10 employees is a very different company culture than what it takes to get from 10 to 100, 100 to 1,000. So always take the time to reevaluate so you're not, like you said, on autopilot.
Identity, community, and purpose.
Everything. That's literally, so I always say in sales, the reason I'm so good is because sales is psychology. Everybody has a reason, right, for why they're doing something. And all behavior is goal-oriented. But our subconscious is very powerful. I'm going to go on a sermon about this. But so that's psych
stuff. Preach it.
But yeah, it's like a lot of people don't know who they are. A lot of people are getting signals and just kind of like riding with it, you know, without taking the time to course correct. And that's usually what anxiety is. Like when there's love, there's no confusion. And the reason a lot of us feel conflict is because we're in conflict with something we're doing. You, by the time people come to me with therapy, you know you should have left that relationship. You know, I mean, and they've even done the studies on this. They say by the time a marriage ends, any relationship, it's been over for one of those parties for at least a third of that time. And they've just been going through the motions. They didn't realize they were unhappy. They were just kind of like, something feels off. When something feels off, emotions or information, pay attention to it, you know? So
I should have known that in my first marriage, but everybody needs a practice round, am I right? There is no better way to learn about yourself than a first marriage, let me tell you.
That's why I say yes, but I've been engaged 3 times, 3 convictions, no charges. So, like,
don't do it.
Be true to yourself. I'm married to me.
It's good.
Don't do it.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Don't do it. Unless you're in love, then do it.
Yeah. So Mary, I don't know if you were aware of this, but Wells Fargo has gone through a couple reputational challenges. And I'm a loyal customer, so been riding that train. But what I want to know is, what have you found to be the skills to navigate through that adversity? Because you've got people like literally saying hateful, horrible things. And what are the skills that you have in place or that you built during your journey that helped you navigate some of that?
Well, you know, it's so thank you very much. And I for being a loyal customer through that, the good news is we've got a lot of those. And that's been really rewarding for our team members because it's been hard. It's been hard to be a team member at Wells Fargo. Not my job's been no harder than anybody else's with what we have gone through. But for me, it's really been about perspective. It's been about resilience. We really have the most resilient team members. But I learned it personally, not professionally. You know, I've been displaced, which is the corporate euphemism for I didn't have a job for a while, and I had to reinvent myself, find ways to go in to do something different. I got thrown into different businesses. I would take notes, and they would say, oh, gosh, she must have a lot of ideas for us. No, I was going home at night to Google what they were talking about because I had no idea as you start to do something really different. But I was 5.5 years ago in Wells Fargo Advisors. We got a lot of Wells Fargo Advisors folks here today, which is our brokerage arm. I had just taken over as the head of Wells Fargo Advisors. It was the only woman doing that across America, which was kind of cool, but you felt this big responsibility. And 6 months into that job at Wells Fargo Advisors, I mentioned we have 3 daughters. I have a nurse, a fourth grade teacher, and our oldest at the time daughter went to go learn to roll a kayak. And 8 days later, she died of what we believe was the brain-eating amoeba that you have now read about across the country. This was 5.5 years ago. And the way that when you say leadership is lonely, leadership, though, can be incredibly rewarding when 200,000 people wrap their arms around you and carry you through tragedy. It was, and so I learned a lot of things. It was how to rely on other people, which I probably hadn't done a good job of learning before that, how to accept help, how to have perspective. So I've been in a job that has had a lot of news cycles and everything else for the last 3 years. It's a really important job for individual clients and for America. And it's a job, right? It's a job I can do. It's a job we can fix. And it's a job. Perspective was a gift. Or gratitude. You talked about it. I got letters from all over the country. I got a letter from a team member in Florida who had lost her 27-year-old son, Drew, in a motorcycle accident. And she wrote me a note and said, remember these words. And when I go to a dark place, it's exactly where I go, which is, it was in Tim Russert's book, Big Russ and Me. I've got a copy of it. I haven't read the whole book, but I've read this chapter over and over. And it was a quote that she adapted that said, if God told you he would take away all the pain you're feeling right now in exchange for the last 23 years, would you make the trade? I wouldn't trade a single day. And to remember that, the grateful feeling that I have for what I've had, as opposed to commiserate in what I don't, is incredibly valuable. The other skill that I have learned is compartmentalization. You can't feel everything all at once. It's impossible to function. And by the way, everybody has a story. That happens to be mine. I tell it because everybody has one. Yours is yours. Mine is mine. But it's okay. We bring all the messiness with us everywhere we go. And but the ability to compartmentalize, I can't be in that space all the time. And you learn that as a life skill. It's a survival skill, which has been incredibly. And I learned all of that through other people who had been through this journey before me and turned around and taught me. So the ability and the opportunity for each one of us to do that for somebody who's behind you in your journey is an obligation. And it's one that I take really seriously, and it's one that we can all help each other. You know, Madeleine Albright said it well. There's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women. And we've got a real opportunity to help each other through this.
Wow, that's so powerful. And I'm so sorry. I did not know. You know, it's interesting when you were talking about your daughter, one of the things you said about perspective and compartmentalizing, it can be so tough to do. And one of the skills that I've had to learn in my journey is that you can't microwave grief. You can't microwave uncomfortable emotions. And most of us are so busy trying to not feel uncomfortable that we push it away. And that not dealing with it is a choice. And one that ends up keeping us stuck even longer. So the fact that you were able to process it and keep it in perspective and also compartmentalize and your career is just absolutely amazing.
And then it shapes your journey. You know, everything I do now, I do to honor her, to be present for my other two daughters. It really changes your whole set. I don't regret a thing. But I won't miss an opportunity either.
Ooh. I love that. Love that. So, Jackie, I'd like to think with cheesecake, there are no haters.
Yes.
How can you hate cheesecake? But all of us get negative feedback, that we don't always agree with. My grandma used to say, Annie, if enough people tell you you're tired, it's time to lay down. She also used to say, if you act like an ass, don't be surprised if people try to ride you. But that's a different panel.
I never want this to end. I love. I'm just laughing and learning and loving and learning.
So, but you know, we all get feedback that we don't like, or that's negative, and it's a skill to learn how to not only accept it and identify it and be with it, but also to use it constructively, even if we disagree with it. How have you done that? How have you handled any negativity or negative feedback or chaos that has ensued since your business started?
Well, I'm just going to be honest and be raw. So we're learning as we grow. That's what I say. We say a lot about this business because we're still not even a whole year yet. So having my sister by my side has helped a lot. So because I've like drafted these messages in response and then I send it to her to look at. And then she sends it back, and it's nothing like what I sent. And I realize, yeah, I need my sister to help to balance me because sometimes I take it downright personal. I just do. And it's difficult to navigate sometimes when you're busy trying to meet the need and people are criticizing you for the way you're doing it. And the truth of the matter is, you know, we went from zero to over 5,000 in just a few months. And that's very difficult when we start out as a bakery, if you will, not a bakery, a bake sale, if you will, because we're trying to just get gas, buy groceries, we're not thinking on the level that it actually exploded to so quickly. So we're like standing like, what do we do? What do we do? Where do we go? And we had to figure it out with no time, literally. So we slept in the kitchen. We really sacrificed a lot to make sure we met the need. So when people criticize it, it's like, did you not hear the story? Like, we're furloughed. This is not our business. We're trying to figure it out. You know, people don't have a lot of patience for you when they want what they want. And we had to realize, no, we're not going to take it personal. Mm-hmm. They're consumers, and they want their product. And I'll be nicer as a consumer from now forward.
Yeah.
So it's just trying to take, you know, have empathy and sympathy for others and know, I'm not going to take this personal. They don't know me. They don't know that we've been up all night. You know, they just want their cheesecake. So we just learn.
We learn as we grow. Right, because it's easy when my daughter is a senior in high school and she's like, I can't wait till I'm done and no one can tell me what to do. Baby girl, adulting is hard. Yeah. But it's interesting because you don't see that side of it as a consumer. You don't see the sleepless nights and sleeping on a kitchen in a beanbag or wherever you were on the floor. You know, you don't see that. And
the diet of cheesecake. I mean, literally, if we didn't have anything to eat, we had cheesecake. And that wasn't always good, though. Magically, we lost weight during that process because we were moving so fast. But, yeah, you just have to actually just go through it, and you just learn, and you make adjustments, and you say, I probably could have said that differently. But thankfully, I've always had my sister there saying, give me that. Let me see. And vice versa, I think we both calmed each other down in situations where, you know, it got tight.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
B. You have a pretty full plate. You've got lots of competing priorities, lots of things going on, and we hear, like, a lot of times on TV, it's like, oh, we balance it perfectly. I'm, like, the PTA president, and I am the, you know, the perfect career woman, and I'm the perfect girlfriend or wife or partner, and I do all of these things, and I bake cupcakes with no GMO, soy, gluten, wheat, or dairy. And what I want to know is, how in the world do you balance that? Realistically, not like perfectly, but realistically.
It's not perfect at all. Like, literally, I'm going to sound like making myself sound like a broke bitch. I have a really nice apartment now. I'm doing well. But I just want to tell you all about the struggle, because that's why I'm up here, right? So as far as doing it perfectly, I don't. It's really bad. Like, I just now paid my taxes. You know, like, literally, like, 2 years later, because I thought, well, anyways, I don't know. But anyway, so, yeah, I'm just figuring it out, just like everybody else. I hold myself to a really high standard, and that's necessary. Anybody who wants to work for themselves, like, most of it, it's not nobody tells you what to do. Everybody tells you what to do. Your customers, your investors, your team, everybody tells you what to do. You're the first person to get yelled at and the last person to get paid. It's really, really rough. But, like, my blessing, I don't see it like, oh, what do I have to do? I was like, what do I get to do? You know, this is my third company, and every single one of them has been about making people feel better. My mommy told me this when I was very young. She's like, you are a professional people person. I love people. And my mission, the reason I'm here on this planet, is to make sure that everybody has someone to talk to on a bad day. So I have lots of bad days, you know, like, but luckily I'm really close with my family as well. I have lots of entrepreneur circles in New York that everybody's really honest about their struggle. And so as a result, I'm honest about my struggle. I always tell people, you know, another good thing about being a therapist and a founder is that I called the suicide hotline once this year. And when my second company closed, I called it 4 times in my last year. And the reason I tell people about that is because that I'm really lucky. Like, when you go through struggle, it's the thoughts are overwhelming. And I'm lucky that as a therapist, I know my body doesn't want to die. My brain just wants the thoughts to stop. And so I just keep telling that message, because so many people who survive suicide attempts always wish, like, damn, like, it really was temporary. So really is zooming out and just really, really aligning with your mission. It's tough, and I take breaks. Believe me, there are some weeks that I only have 2 productive days a week. It's really tough. But I think that the best thing is, yeah, to not take things personally, because I'm blessed. I have white guy problems, y'all. I get to, like, chase my dreams and, like, build businesses with other people's money. Like, what could I be mad about?
Did you just say white girl problem?
White guy problem.
White guy problem. White guy problem. Oh, damn.
My parents are immigrants, and they made sure that I live my life like an entitled white man. And it's working. It's working great.
That's the American dream.
I love it.
Sorry for the white entitled.
No, y'all have it good. That's the American dream. It's a good life, you know, and everybody should feel like that too, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I feel like as far as people, I'm always amazed. Like, I intentionally put off having children. I froze my eggs when I was 32. I'm 36 now. When people have businesses and kids, I don't know how they do it. So I'm really gentle with myself. You know, I remind myself of my mission and radical prioritization.
It's, you know, it's interesting because my therapist will say, you know, I go to my therapist. And she said, every therapist needs a therapist.
Absolutely.
And I think so many people are the stigma attached with it. I mean, we heard from just that Amanda this morning, amazing young woman who's so incredibly brave. I think the more recent statistic is 1 in 5 adults and children struggle with mental health. Mm-hmm. You know, 45% of women are on an anti-anxiety or antidepressant medication. It is something that we all deal with. Yet, if I were to say, all right, ladies, raise your hand if you're on an antidepressant, everybody would be like, oh.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of refreshing to hear somebody who went to Columbia and has a degree in therapy and who is a psychotherapist say, I've called the suicide hotline.
Everybody is struggling. Everybody has stuff. Everybody's different perspective. Some things that people, like, unfortunately die by suicide on really tiny things. And the reason we have to be open about it is our kids, 10 to 15 are very formative years, and their hormones are intense. They live in the here and now. They have more successful suicides than even, like, adult males. So we have to be honest about, you know, it's just like the ocean. Anxiety can kill you. Depression can kill you. We can't just say walk it off, hug a friend. Like, it's something, with our physical health, so we have to talk about our social health as well, because so many people feel lonely, and that it's a real problem with social media. We feel connected, but without the intimacy.
Right.
So anyways, that's all.
Yeah, that's so true. My daughter, when she was a junior, there was a senior who got stabbed in the neck by 2 eighth graders for a $40 vape pen, and they killed him.
Oh, my God.
And it's like the places that we are living now are very different. And when my daughter says, you don't understand the stress we're under, I'm like, you're right. I can't imagine if there was Facebook when I was in high school. It was hard enough just being in high school, let alone Facebook.
We need each other. And they say it's 1 out of 5 people with, but it's 5 out of 5 because everybody has somebody who
everybody
suffered
has
from that.
Right. Right, you're right.
All connected.
Mary, you're like the poster child for what seems like perfection. I look at you and you're a wife and you're a mom and you're a daughter and you're a career executive and you're on boards and, like, in your spare time, do you just, like, run marathons and, like,
probably
save babies and shit? I don't know how you do that. I mean, like, how do you have it all? How do you do it?
Wow. Okay, so I am a big believer that you can have it all. You just can't have it all at the same time. You know, there are points in my life when my girls were little, I didn't travel. I passed on jobs. Now, what I tell people all the time is, look, I had opportunities to go do other things in other places, and I didn't do it. But you can't say no and then resent the people who are doing it. Mm. All you're doing is carrying that stuff around. They don't even know you're over there resenting it. You're just carrying it around with you like a ball and chain. And so I have said a number of times, look, I can't do that job right now because it doesn't work for us, but I'll be on your panel to select a new leader. I kind of know what you need. I just can't do it. And so you've got to figure out how it ebbs and flows. And then when we moved to St. Louis, we had raised our girls in the same place. We moved to St. Louis. We had a family meeting. We all sat around and said, okay, I've got a really cool opportunity. Can we do this? Because we're going to do it together. Mm-hmm. And it you know, we made trade-offs and choices. My daughter said, my youngest was a volleyball player. It was 1 year earlier than I wanted because she had 1 more year of high school. But we said, okay, we can make this work. She played volleyball. And I said, I'll make a deal with you. And by the way, they do not put girls' sports on the best nights of the week. The boys get Friday night. Mm-hmm. The girls get Tuesdays and Thursdays. When your family's in South Carolina and you're in St. Louis, it's really hard to make every Tuesday and Thursday. So I said, okay, let's put the map out, or put the calendar out there, and you circle every game you don't want me to miss. And I promise I'll never miss an important game, and I won't miss 2 in a row. But it's your choice. You set the schedule, and I'll live by it. So she had a lot of control. So long story short, they make it into the state finals or whatever it was, and I'm someplace else. And I'm sitting on a tarmac, and, you know, when you're sitting there and the doors are closed, so you're trapped, and the plane's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. It's not going. And I'm watching my watch, and the guy next to me said, sort of, lady, what's your problem? I said, my daughter is a senior. She's captain of the volleyball team, and she's got her playoffs. And if we don't take this plane and take off soon, I'm going to miss it. And he said, oh, if she's captain of the team, she'll play in college. I said, no. She's 5'4". This may be her last volleyball game ever. Oh, my God. You don't have any idea how important that is. And so I literally, and it wasn't the big things, but it was a really big thing to me. I made it. I came in hot, man. I went flying across the state of South Carolina. But I would have changed anything for those moments. And so what I found out to organize is I had to put those moments first. Those really were the big rocks in the jar, right? And everything else fit. And if it meant my job was the second, my job, they know when my phone rings and one of those girls pops up, if they need me. Now, they also will call both phones like 3 or 4 times. And I've had to retrain them on what an emergency really is. But, you just sort of work it out.
I had the luxury of speaking in a conference with Michelle Obama and talk about poise and grace. And someone asked her that question, how do you balance it all? And she said, balance begins when you believe you're worth it.
Mm.
And I just thought,
that's good.
That is good. Yeah. That is good. And, you know, when we think about success, it's easy to think, well, there's no setback. It's just all the rise up to the top. And Jackie, I don't know how the business has grown and what it's gone through, but has there ever been a time where you felt like thrown in the towel and just given up? And if so, how do you keep going?
I do it afraid. Fear, often people think you shouldn't have fear, you shouldn't have fear. You should never let fear paralyze you. But sometimes fear is present when you have to make a choice. Mm-hmm. So I've decided whether my knees are knocking or not, when I'm standing up, I do it afraid. And that was the case from the very, very beginning. I mean, if I thought about it long enough, we probably wouldn't have started the business because it's like, okay, we have no income and we need to buy ingredients for cheesecakes with no orders. So yes, my knees were knocking at the register when I gave them the card. And I'm like, okay. And I just trusted that, you know what, this idea is bigger than us and it's going to work. And I just believe that, and we still do it afraid. This is unfamiliar territory for us. We furloughed the government back in March. So this is our full-time job now. And it is a very challenging place to be, very vulnerable as an entrepreneur. But I believe in our company. I believe in my sister. I believe in the product. And I just trust the process. And it won't always be hard. I believe that. And just give yourself room to grow and make mistakes. So do it afraid. Just do it.
Man, I wish we had like a few glasses of wine and time to talk.
It'd be fun.
Man, I could just enjoy this all day. But we want to give you guys a chance to participate. So I'm going to turn it back over to Marla right now. And I just thank you so much for being so candid and vulnerable. Yeah.
You guys had me laughing so hard I was crying down there. So that was pretty awesome. Really, really great session, and thank you for sharing your stories and your honesty and just being raw and real. It was awesome. So this is our Q&A time, so if you do have a question, I'd ask you to come up to a mic to ask that question so the overflow room can also hear you. But to kick us off, I have one question to start you off with. If you could go back to your younger self and give them one piece of advice about resilience, what would you say? We'll start at the end with B.
Oh, no. Can I go last? I got to think. There's so many.
All right. We'll go the other way. We'll start with Anne, then.
All right. It would be, you'll figure it out. There were so many times I thought, I can't. I don't want to. It's not fair. Woe is me. Why do my friends have kids that they can take to Walmart, and mine takes down an end cap and threatens to kill the cashier? You know, and there were times where I just didn't want to do it anymore. And I wish that the 44-year-old version of me would have told the 24 version of me that whatever comes your way, you will figure it out. Good, bad, right, wrong, you will figure it out. Because that is what we do. And there is no other option.
I would say to make yourself a priority. Oftentimes, as women, we have a full plate and we put everything else above us. So I would say make yourself a priority, that you matter, how you feel is important, and always, always, always be true to you.
Mary?
So I get a lot of letters from people. Not all of them are happy with what we've done. But every now and then I get a really cool one. So I got a letter, I don't know, a couple months ago from a new grandfather who had boys. And when his boys were little, they did letter writing campaigns. And they wrote presidents and astronauts just to see if they would write back. And so they had collected all kinds of letters. And he said, I've just had my first granddaughter, and I asked my son what present I could give her. And he said, get some letters. So he said, I'm writing women, probably from like the Fortune thing or whatever. I'm writing women who are in some level or some have some influence to see if you would write a letter that my granddaughter can read at 15. And so I sat down and hand wrote a letter to Vale, is the granddaughter's name. And after I wrote it, I thought, oh, that's pretty good advice. I probably ought to take a picture of it. And so I did, and I wrote it down, so I'll be fast. But here's what I wrote. And I wrote to Vale about how wonderful her grandfather was, you know, what a cool thing it was that he was doing. And here's what I said. It's a lot of what you all have said. Be authentic. Be you. How much time did I waste reinventing myself and wearing those god-awful little bow ties when I first started to start working? Embrace change, new ideas, and new adventures. You never know where it'll take you. Be kind. Everyone has a story, and you may be the difference that they need today. Listen, there's no greater way to value someone than just to listen. And believe in yourself, and others will too. It's on my phone so that I can read it every now and then to myself.
That's good. A lot of people deal with imposter syndrome, for sure. So one thing I always tell myself is, if one can, all can. It really is about focus and faith in yourself. So just if one can, all can, just always remind yourself. Really ride the waves. I mean, all of us have been through so much stuff. But what I've learned in my clients and my work, chaos always happens before a change. I believe chaos always happens before a good change, but it's up to you. Like, life is going to change with or without you, so you have to be an active part of it. So make sure you get ahead of it. Path of least resistance. When bad things are happening, it'll carry you somewhere else. So just, again, like, try and relax as much as you can. It's really bad for your brain to stress out. And, just about, finally, I would say, things happen so other things can happen. And that'll change your perspective, you know? Like, some people always say, oh, everything happens for a reason. People hate hearing that during tough times. But, like, nobody ever said everything happens for a good reason. It's just a reason so other things can happen. This is part of your evolution. So, like, I always say, if we keep evolving, we could fly one day. So just keep it up.
Love it.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Don't be afraid of the mics. These are friendly people. Have one.
So thank you so much. This was super inspiring and very grateful for everything that you shared. So I know that it's hard to pick a session, and other sessions I know talk about unconscious bias, and I'm just sure you've all encountered unconscious bias, conscious bias, but just since you're so strong and have so many tips for resilience, I would just love to hear any of your advice on that too, because I think just that inner resilience that you bring, I'm sure when you encounter it, you face it in a different way.
I know y'all want to run to your next session, but just hang tight for a couple more minutes. I realize it'll be a madhouse and you want to get a good seat, but these ladies are donating their time and volunteering their wisdom, and I'd love to just give them that respect for sure.
Thank you.
Unconscious bias. I would say try not to pay too much attention, just because ignorance is bliss. When I got into Y Combinator, which if y'all don't know is the startup kingmaker, like Airbnb, Dropbox, all of them went through that. When I got in, I was the first African-American female founder accepted. When I got in, I didn't know I was the first African-American female founder accepted, and it's good that I didn't. There were actual rocket scientists in my batch, and I was like, hey, I like therapy, you know? So like, If I had known all that, I probably wouldn't have applied. You know, at the beginning, the less you know, the better. Yes, it's good to prepare, listen to podcasts, come to these things, but the less you know, the less you're going to box yourself in. The dream is what gets you there. The crazy, it's what gets you there. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, this is how we're always going to do therapy forever and ever. Like, okay. But yeah, like, try and prove it to yourself versus other people. You cannot change what other people think about you. It's a waste of time to try to convince anybody about anything. But yeah, and I would say when you get in the room, don't be the only person in the room. I get tired of being the only one, so I'm very generous. A lot of women, if you see a woman at the top or a person of color at the top, they've been through some shit, you know? And so I've been really lucky in my New York community. People have always reached back and taught me things. So do the same. It really keeps you going, like just seeing how far you've come.
This is great advice, and the thing I would add to it, I had a chance for a dozen years to serve on the board of an historically black college or university in Charlotte, Johnson C. Smith University. It's a fantastic place. It was such a great experience, and so I would encourage you to put yourself in a place of difference. That's also where you learn. Because what I learned there, I went into every board meeting thinking my voice didn't matter. I was different. I looked different. Did my voice really matter? The people who helped me realize my voice mattered were the majority in the room. So when you're the majority, be the person who makes sure every voice matters.
Yes.
And it raises your own consciousness around it, too, so that actually you have more conscious interpretation of the surrounding as opposed to unconscious.
Yeah, I agree. Both of those advice is really good. I just think being true to who you are is what really matters, and not what people perceive or what people see. Being who you are. When we started our business, we weren't really trying to make a difference. But we realized once we did the business how many different people it affected, how many women were so proud, how many young people were proud, how many black people were proud. Just be true to who you are and then let them figure it out.
Thank you.
Good luck.
We'll take one last question.
What do you think the biggest myth of resiliency is that you would like to help us dispel?
I'll start this one off. Whoever told you to just keep pushing lied to you. That you rest is a requirement. You literally, your brain works better, your mood, you make better decisions. Don't keep pushing. You're doing a disservice to whatever you're trying to get through, especially with the grief process. It takes a long term to live with grief. Grief is like a 100-pound thing, and some days you can't carry it, some days you carry it on your back. Do not push through. If you're having trouble with your marriage, with your kids, with your parents, don't just push through and just keep trying to do something. It's banging your, see those toys just keep running the wall, just take it and redirect. Take some time to rest. The world needs you at your best, and rest is a requirement for that.
And I would add to that, everybody does it differently, and we need to respect the fact that everybody's path is different. There's no straight path. When Mir Warner died, there's a wonderful organization in Charlotte called Kindermorn, and it was formed by parents who lost a child for grieving parents, and now it's for grieving children. And it's a great organization. But anyway, I got connected with them. I went home to my husband, and I said, we ought to go to counseling. And he said something like, counseling is for, somebody who's crazy. I said, well, I'm crazy. I am going crazy. I need this. He said, okay, I'll go with you once. We went every 2 weeks for a year. And we learned how to talk, and we also learned that we do it differently. And that probably was the most important thing for us to respect the differences. And now I lean in when parents have lost children, because it's a hard path, and we do it differently.
That's a tough question. I would just say that, just show up. Like, some people give you steps and say you need to do this first, and this first. I would say just stand up, show up. And allow it to happen and do the best that you can. There's no real formula other than you can't be resilient if you don't show up.
And your best is going to be different every day, so just do your best.
Could I just jump in? There's a question that somebody ought to go up to the mic and ask, and you haven't, so I'm going to give you the answer anyway. For those of you all who are taking notes,
I can't.
The website is www. That, is that what that says? The.
Yeah.
TheFurloughCheesecake.com.
Thank you.
So, my husband is getting one for Christmas. I'm not sure if I have the courage for a sweet potato cheesecake. And when you go on the website, write Nikki a note, because she reads every one of them. She's had to go to her own session. She told me she reads every one of them. www.thefurloughcheesecake.com.
Look at that. Wow.